It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Hello, sports fans.
Well, hello there.
Local sports, national sports. The GCAT has got you covered.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Time to tee it up and let it fly. It's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
Check it out, Jordan.
Hour one was brought to you by No Wake Outfitters. Hour two brought to you by Chris's Bavings as we welcome you to hour three. Literally, as we start hour three, the Pelicans taking off on their way to New York to battle the Brooklyn Nets. Let's see if we can hear them. Got the mic pointed out the window. No. We're taking off towards the lake. So if you're driving right now and you see a big old Delta plane heading over Vets, heading towards the lake, that's your Pelicans. As they start the first of four straight over there on the road, you got Orlando and Miami on Thursday and Friday, Detroit on Sunday, and tomorrow will be the Brooklyn Nets. Got a couple of watch parties here as well. Tomorrow will be at Evangeline Lounge, while Friday will be at Wrong Iron over there in Mid-City. Always a cool and fun place to go there as well. And that was Bank Rick. Always likes to know where we're going to be hanging out and heading out during the week. So those are official watch parties, like, you know, Pierre will be there, the dance team members, goodies, all that stuff. So team's on its way, and we hope that they have a happy and safe road trip as they come back with a couple of more wins in the fifth spot in the Western Conference, and more importantly, getting some help over the weekend that helped them stay in fifth and do so as well. So got a handful of sound bites I definitely want to get to here as well. Marlon Favre at 2:15, Leo Haggerty at 2:30. Cedric Wilson Jr. just got put up there, so I'm going to try to cut him over the next couple minutes to try to have that ready for you before we wrap up the show. But Nathan Peterman back up for your New Orleans Saints. We're just playing about his decision to come to New Orleans and why, and whether or not he has already spoken to Derek Carr, a quarterback he's already backed up already in Vegas.
Yeah, he was one of the first calls I made, kind of deciding on everything and to talk through things and stuff. And obviously he kind of knew the situation here and knew, had been here for a year. So was a good guy to kind of talk to. Yeah, he was one of the first calls I made, kind of deciding on everything and to talk through things and stuff. And obviously he kind of knew the situation here and knew, had been here for a year. So was a good guy to kind of talk to and, get an option. I'm extremely excited to be back with them. We had a great relationship, and have continued to have that. It's been fun, in the room. I've always tried to help him as much as possible and on game day as well, any way I can. I think you always need somebody just to kind of have fun and compete with too. Derek's a great competitor, and so always trying to push each other, whatever it is in practice, I think is important too.
One of the things that he also touched on when we played last hour, Andrew Chinoco was a quarterback's coach under Clint Kubiak as well, went over there with the Vikings, so lots of familiarity again. Understands the offense, understands who his quarterback coach is. It's happened already. Had this to say about Coach?
Yeah, I think he's an extremely hard worker. He's always extremely prepared, extremely detailed. And so I think he's going to do a great job of that, just continue to do that. And then, he does a great job also just of making things fun, but also just, keeping it competitive. On the field as well with drill work or whatever it is. So I think he'll do a great job, continue to do that here in New Orleans.
Now, as far as what he was told as to what to expect or what's expected of him while he's here.
Yeah, just that it was going to be a competition and, that how I go about approaching it is just, to try to do, I think what you do every day regardless is, again, to come in, be the best you can be, do the best you can with what you have and what you're given, and then, be a great teammate and try to rub off on others.
All right. Thoughts on his career so far?
Yeah, I think for me it's just to show up every day and be ready to compete, do your best and be a great teammate, and then, work extremely hard on the field when you get your chances and your opportunities. So, I've always tried to do that. I've always tried to put myself in the best position possible and, be ready to compete. And then, obviously, just being a great teammate, I think, goes a long way as well.
He was also asked about, in his career, how he has seen himself sort of improve as a quarterback.
Yeah, well, I think number one is always treating yourself, treating every game like you're the starter, you know, and preparing every game like that, whether you're the backup, you're the third, whatever it is. And so I think when you do that, it allows you to kind of have some of those experiences without having those experiences, you know, of kind of the mental reps to go through it. And then that also helps, you know, translate to helping whoever it is play at the time. And then, you know, I have had my opportunities to play as well and feel like those have been huge learning opportunities for me, you know, even here recently in the last 2 years. So always trying to grow, always trying to learn, I think is a way to I've been able to stick around and you know, trying to get better just and the mental aspect is so important in the NFL. So just always trying to get better in that and keep growing.
One more final thing on Peterman here as well. Two more things. He did say he has met some of the staff, including this morning.
No, yeah. So I got to talk with most of the staff today earlier and had a great, great interaction. First meeting with Clint and a few of the other staff members. So talked through some things of, you know, what we might be trying to do. So, again, I'm just excited to kind of get here, get OTA started and get in the playbook a little bit more and really, you know, especially get on the grass and really get started.
One of the other things that he touched on, too, was by meeting some of the staff this morning. He got a first look at that offense. Remember that playbook, hot and fresh. They just put it together. And his thoughts on this offense.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, just kind of some things that they've done in their past, some things that they might be looking to do now, you know, just combining a few things. And, again, you know, they do a – I think I said this earlier, too, is they do a great job of just – putting the defense on its heels, you know, attacking the defenses in a lot of different ways. You know, there's a lot of talented defenses, a lot of talented defensive players. So any way you can attack those guys a little bit differently, whether it be in the run game or the pass game, quarterback movement, whatever it is, I think they've always done a great job of that. So I'm looking forward to getting into the work of it.
All right, there you go. So you got yourself a little firsthand look at checking it out and seeing what that offense is going to be like. Had a chance to cut at least two bites here so you could hear from Cedric Wilson Jr., former Miami Dolphin of your Roy Miami Dolphins. But again, played in that offense. Very similar to the Peterman move here. I get it. It's not going to move the needle. It's not going to, you know, flash on the ticker and people go, "What? I'm sorry? Who?" I hear you. But you saw Sean do it. You've seen coaches do it. And I think smartly, when you switch to a philosophy or you switch to a scheme in which everyone's got to learn it, bringing in players, coaches that are familiar with it, help. Pretty much all the offensive staff that came with Kubiak had either coached or been in that system, one way, shape, or form. With Clint or his dad. The quarterback's coach, as we just talked about, Andrew Janoco, worked with Peterman, but also worked with Kubiak. So it makes sense. Cedric Wilson, literally, another situation like that, right? Where I get it. It's I don't know if he sells the jerseys and things of that nature, but who better to come in into the system and understand what that role is and how to explain it to the other receivers and what they're looking to do than somebody that literally just ran it and has been playing in it. Ross Jackson last week said when he looked, and he goes back to 221 where he had probably his highest statistical success in that year, they used him a lot in motion and giving him the ball out of motion in that backfield, which is something that I guess the easiest way to remember or look at is the way they use Deebo Samuel. I'm not saying that that's how they're going to use Cedric Wilson. They may use other players, but when I think of that, right, comes in motion, here's the ball. Either toss, a handoff, or whatever, and then you're off and running. He kind of gets you started in that situation. But Wilson spoke a little bit ago, and he was asked quite simply, why the Saints?
I mean, just looking over the – I mean, it happened fairly quickly, actually, but just – going through the whole process and the 2 days of the span that it took, it was just, I felt like it was just the right fit, knowing that they were going to be running the same offense that I just ran in the previous 2 years. And then obviously talking to my agent about it. He knows more about the organization than me, so I picked his brain a little bit, and this was just the final destination that I felt like I wanted to be at.
All right. As for this offense, just like Peterman, what do you think about it?
I feel like this offense just fits every different type of receiver, whether you're fast, whether you're tall. It definitely opens up the game for any unique skill set. And I found I've never played in the West Coast offense until I got there. And then it took me 2 years to kind of finally get comfortable. And now I kind of know what I like to do in it.
And then the other aspect of it, too, is kind of like Peterman, too. What was talked about with the staff or expectation levels and things of that nature in terms of earning snaps and reps?
Just the overall factor of just be a vet and make sure I need you to stay on the lookout for small things and make sure that I'm coming to work every day being a veteran that the younger players need to see, but at the same time showing that I can compete and that's going to bring the best out of everybody.
So again, I mean, you're hearing it from both players here, and look, Uncle Earl, we talked earlier today, and we were talking about it, about how is it that these moves are, and you know, whether you have the money to do that, why it's not a splash this and splash. Look, I hear you, but it just goes back to what we were talking about. This is a situation where you want to be able to show the other players how to do it. Look, this guy's done it. This is how he used it. He can explain it on the field. He can explain it to the other receivers. Peterman can explain it to Carr. He can sit there. He's worked with them. And that familiarity and that comfort as well, I think, is important as they continue to make sure that everyone is comfy in their role and in their place. And what a difference as I'm looking at the TV as NBA Today is about to start. Graf, are you watching this? Identity crisis as they show the Clippers. What is their identity? People literally thought they're going to be the one seed. They look pretty unstoppable. They've lost a few games, and now they have an identity crisis as the Pels are on their way. The Graf in New Orleans taking off just a little bit ago at the top of the hours. They're heading over to Brooklyn for the first of four straight before they take on Orlando Thursday, the Heat in Miami on Friday, and then Detroit on Sunday, and then the gauntlet begins as six straight home games begin. When you take a look at those games, and then you took a look at the four-game road trip that follows as well, it's a gauntlet. I don't know how else to look at it. So after that Pistons game, you come back and you host the Thunder, Bucks, Celtics, Suns, Magic, Spurs, who won last night, and Wemby's playing well. Then you go on the road for four at the Suns, at the Trailblazers, at the Kings, at the Warriors, and you conclude the regular season at home against Marlin favorites, Los Angeles Lakers. Speaking of Big Fave, he's next on ESPN New Orleans.
What would you say
you do?
Sports.
All day long.
Hello, sports fans.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
800-998-1003 on the Rooter Man hotline and guest line. RooterManFan.com. Check them out online. Big Fave 504 is the way to follow our guy, Marlin Favorite. And, of course, Inside the Trenches, the podcast, you can go check that out as well visually on YouTube. Just type in Inside the Trenches, and there's Big Fave. What's up, sir? How are you?
Hello, somebody. Feeling good. We got a live remote tonight at UPP Sports Social from 6 to 8. We're going to record so much to talk about with the Saints. I got my homeboy, Sterling. He listening to us right now talking about Stanley Morgan, Tyrann Mathieu. Trey looks like we're getting a little
sand
all down here, too.
Okay, I see what you're doing there. Ain't nothing wrong with that, for sure. Look, we wouldn't get, obviously, to some NFL free agency stuff in here, is that nature, but getting closer and closer as spring football is, it's crazy as you can look at it. We're getting closer and closer to April and the spring game, things of that nature, but I asked you this on Monday and on Friday here as well. Anything that has stood out or has been of note as LSU spring football practices continue?
Well, what I continue to hear is, I mean, the number one conversation is the lack of depth up front. So it seems like everybody I talked to, my guy Preston from Tiger Bait on the show the other day, and he was just talking about how that area is super thin. Hunt Palmer told me, "Hey, Big Fave, could you suit up?" Just those things in terms of depth on the defensive line. But the positive from camp, and of course the guys had last week off, the positives we've been getting is how those youngsters like Ashton Stamps is progressing, you know, taking one-on-one reps with Kyrie Lacy, his Archbishop Rummel guy. And then you also look at how the receiving corps is shaping up with C.J. Daniels, and it looks like from that perspective, offensively, things are clicking with Nussmeier in the mm-hmm. receiving corps. I like what I'm hearing about the offensive line, like those future All-Pro guys we have up front, and Will Campbell and Emory Jones and Frazier as well, as names popping up a lot in terms of the offensive line. But one thing I am excited about, and a lot of folks are as well, is the emergence of Caleb Jackson. You know, you still have Josh Williams back there. He's still your number one running back.
Right.
But I feel like this year, Caleb Jackson, and even looking at him at practice work with the two, looks like he's going to be a reliable back for us as well.
Mm. That's good news, obviously. And look, you said this before, too. Sometimes spring ball, the importance of it is different depending on your class and depending on how much, you know, time these guys have played and getting in those actions here as well. But, you know, I heard Matt talk about it a couple of weeks ago for a guy like Nussmeier. And to your point, too, it's one thing to get as many of those reps there as well. And I know, like, rep-wise, but just also kind of getting used to the new voices of the new season, right? Every year is different. Some of those guys move on, whether it's the draft, the NFL, or even transfer, right? But the importance of this time of being those voices that you hear, Marlon, that become eventually captains or leaders or kind of asserting yourself on that. It starts now, not fall ball, right?
It is. And you talk about, you know, just getting familiar with the voices and being able to utilize this time to take the guys that you have here. Because, Gus, here's another harsh reality. Right. A lot of times after spring ball, a lot of these guys want to hit the transfer portal. So it's even more important to be able to get that camaraderie going and put the team in a position where, man, I want to play with these guys this fall. Mm-hmm. And the more and more they do that, you know, getting even the coaches' voices in their heads, the player locker room, I mean, Nussmeier is a motivator. I think the competition, all that works together, and that's the beauty of spring ball.
Oh, I hear that, man. I like that. By the way, one of the things that I always love to look at when it comes to, like, spring ball and things of that nature, you always touch about it's changed, right? How what those games are and what that atmosphere sort of is like. But at the same time, this is kind of the only time you can compete before you kind of start getting into that fall, right? So how important is it when you have certain drills where competition sort of matters here?
I can't stress to you the individual competition, how important they are. You look at one-on-one pass rush. I'll start inside the trenches with the one-on-one pass rush. Those guys that win most of the reps, the coaches are watching that every day. Even after practice on film, and they're looking at, man, this kid, I'll just use a veteran we know going to play. This man, Savion Jones, is consistently winning his pass rush reps. So the more and more that happens, the better off it is for the coaches to evaluate during that spring film sessions, just the coaches.
Right.
So now you think third down and long, man, we could trust this guy. We could put him in on the game and be a reliable pass rusher. I'm telling you, even in my time, I remember this worked well for rest in peace to my brother, Rakim Alim. Him, Kirsten Pittman, just different guys that even when Kirsten was a rotational guy in the year we had Katrina, he was a freshman 2 years prior and a sophomore that had experience. But even in that year when he did come back to us, he was just so reliable on third down. So I think you look at it from that perspective as well, just being able to see what guys work in certain packages.
Mm-hmm. Good point. And let's see what takes place on that. All right, Marlon Favorite, Big Fave 504 is the way to give a follow. Inside the Trenches, the podcast. Sir, I got to ask you, right? I mean, the massive move that the Dallas Cowboys made in lowering Dak Prescott's cap number from 60 to 55 million. 60 to 55 million, baby. How about that $4 million in spending cash for you, Cowboy? But look, I heard a lot of the guys this morning nationally talk about it. I heard number 60. That's what maybe he's asked, which is why the Cowboys have not given him a new deal and extension. Is Dak Prescott $60 million to you?
He's not. He is. Okay, Dak Prescott, and I'll let our listeners answer this for us, too. Mm-hmm. Dak Prescott is a 10, he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. He's in the top 10. You start jogging through names, Joe Burrow's in there. Of course, Patrick Mahomes, the number one guy. You go through the list. Dak's somewhere between 8 and 9. I put Brock Purdy at like 10, maybe Dak at 9. So you start looking at what's the medium for the quarterbacks, and then there's his value. Because he's at the bottom tier of that 10. Because let's be honest. I mean, yes, he did have the weapons. But, boy, Dak's name was in the hat for MVP. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't like trash Dak that we used to, like, he kind of was like 2016 Dak, but I think it's a little more mature, obviously. But I think if you look at paying him, he like another guy we know, yeah, he needed to restructure his contract because, I mean, I do think that they need to look at an end that could complement Michael Parsons, or just edge rusher, should I say.
Right.
They're in the market for a running back, of course. I don't know if they're going to try their hardest to find that in free agency or what have you, but I mean, they do. They lost some pieces defensively. Linebacker as well. Van Ness retires. Of course, he dealt with a lot of injuries. So I see why they did what they did. They made some space to go get some vets. They're gonna need it.
I'm just asking. Yeah, man. I'm just, you know, just $60 million, man. I look, because it was compared and contrasted to what the Steelers did. They essentially, as you know, over the weekend, they get Justin Fields for a conditional sixth-round pick. It can get up to a four depending on playing time, but right now it's a sixth-round pick for Justin Fields. They got Russell Wilson for $1.2 million. So they got two quarterbacks for not nearly as much on that to kind of look at it. I don't know, man, your opinion on that. I know Ryan Clark does a lot here in this area, and he's on ESPN and stuff, but, you know, being a Steeler here as well with him, what do you think of that fit? Look, last week I told you, I'd have called the Bears and offered a fifth. Saints got five fifth-round picks, and I'd have tried to make them the next Taysom Hill, and, you know, why not? I would have seen what he can do for a fifth-round pick, and he winds up going for a sixth-round pick. What do you think of Fields to the Steelers?
I mean, of course, the first thing I thought of was New Orleans, and especially after we got Nathan Peterman. Boy, we're going to have a segment on that tonight. But I think the Steelers are the winners in this weekend's free agency because of the big boatload of money that Denver has to still pay Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to really pay him. And, $1.2 million? No, three, four? Okay, two's fine. I don't care. Just get me out of here. Mike Tomlin he has a Super Bowl quarterback now. He hasn't had this since Roethlisberger. I mean, that's mm-hmm. just the bottom line. He has a Super Bowl-tier quarterback. A system I think will work for him. And then for Justin Fields, he never really had a chance to learn how to be a professional. I think you look at the two Ohio State quarterbacks, C.J. Stroud had more support around him coming mm-hmm. in to perform, but people forget that Justin Fields beat C.J. Stroud out at Ohio State. So I look at that, and I'm like, man, this guy's going to be playing behind Russell. Anything happens with Russell, you have an NFL starting quarterback to pop in. So I like what they did. I'm just, boy. I get the Nathan Peterman deal down here. I understand it. You know, familiarity with Coach Andrew.
Yep.
He's been a backup to Coach Dak Prescott.
Derek Carr. Right. He's worked with Carr already. I'm with you 100%. I like it. All makes sense, and I hear you. And I guess that's sort of the way you look at things, right? Whether it's marriages, partnerships, relationships, business ventures, whatever, it's probably about best fit. But sometimes, you know, I don't know. I'd like to maybe look ahead, kind of think ahead, outside the box, things of that nature. But I understand it. Look, the Saints are in it. in a world where they need to make what they have work. And that means coaching up certain players. So they pretty much have redone their, you know, their offensive and defensive side, staff-wise, coaching-wise, getting players that have been in that system. I just finished playing some Cedric Wilson sound of him saying, hey, I know how to run this offense, or you know, what my role can be in this offense and things of that nature. So you got a receiver that can help the receivers, and you're bringing in a quarterback that can help the quarterback. So I get that. It makes sense. But, man, it's worth a flyer, I guess.
All you can think of is five interceptions in one game. That's all I can think of. Every time I think of Nathan Peterman, I think Buffalo Bills, this guy stunk it up. But listen,
well,
you went on somebody's roster, and then you're on another roster, you're doing something right.
Yeah, no, at the end of the day, like I said, I guess you do hope this for all teams in the NFL. You hope those starters stay in there more than anything else, right? So if that's the case. But, Marlon, we will have more coming up on Friday, another week of LSU spring football practice. But also, how is your bracket going to be doing? Who do you have in the Final Four? You have a Final Four yet?
Ooh, I'm working on it. Ladies, right? I'm talking ladies because the guys are following. Yeah, so LSU, UConn, South Carolina, Notre Dame.
Wow.
I'm still working on my guys. That's my top four.
Still working on the guys. All right,
no,
that's
Iowa,
fine.
Iowa, not Notre Dame. Iowa.
Right. Well, here's the problem. LSU and Iowa in the same regional.
That's right. So it would have to be.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, that is a tough regional, man. UCLA is in there, a 2 seed. Iowa's a 1 seed. LSU's a 3 seed. So they'd have to get past UCLA first, then face Iowa in the Elite 8 game to go to the Final Four game if Iowa got there as well. Rafael Esparza has Auburn, Kentucky, North Carolina, and Tennessee in the Final Four. And he has North Carolina cutting down the nets at the end of the day, the Tar Heels.
Ooh,
champions.
All right, Rafael. I see you. Bye. I see you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm messing with that for tonight's show. I really want to focus on the LSU stop. I forgot Iowa. I'm so used to us meeting them last year. We met them
You met them in a championship game. The meet would happen in the Elite 8 game. Anyway, thank you, man. Appreciate the time, bud.
Peace.
There he goes. Big Faith 504 is a way to give a follow. And Inside the Trenches is the podcast. Up next, Leo Haggerty on the Sports Hangover in ESPN New Orleans.
Let's hit it.
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
Boy, cut a fresh Cedric Wilson Jr. soundbite with the Dolphins a season ago. And basically, I'll tease it for you. I'll play right after our conversation with Leo Haggerty. Better do your homework. That's all I'm saying. You know that soundbite, Leo Haggerty. Do your homework. Apparently, that system works, but there's a big mental capacity. Two of the first 6 sound bites I've cut from the new Saints receiver who played with the Finns basically says it is a mentally challenging offense, but once you get it down, points are coming. What's up, Leo? How are you, sir?
You know what, Gus? I'm doing fine. I'm out here in Clearwater at the Phillies are playing the Pirates in the little bit of a spring training game here, but I'll tell you what, the Pirates shortstop, Cruz, he's 6'7", and he's already hit 2 of them. They probably ended up in the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, they were moonshots. So it's been a fun day. You know, I got brackets ready, and I'm watching baseball. Just getting better than that.
6'7". Goodness gracious.
6'7". You got to look at this guy. And he wears his pants like old school, down around his knees.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy's enormous.
Well, maybe they don't make pants that long, man. No, look, obviously a lot of LSU fans around here are going to be following the Pirates a little bit closer once Paul Skeens makes his way up to the major league level there as well. But the Pirates got some young guys and some young talent. Let's see what takes place as the season starts. And, of course, my Cubbies and everything else. The Dodgers and the Padres, they're already overseas. They will start their series coming up, so it's pretty interesting. They're doing a tour over there, I guess getting acclimated, playing a whole week of baseball before they actually play some games that matter and count Padres and Dodgers. But I want to ask you, of course, about the NFL. It's king, and as we've been talking about on Friday, all the different moves and things that nature in the division itself, and then over the weekend, Russell Wilson goes for a 6. You heard me on Friday. I might have sounded crazy. I'm like, yeah, maybe I offer the Bears a 5th. Maybe make them the next Taysom Hill and stuff. Per the reports, 4 teams other than Pittsburgh reached out to Justin Fields. I haven't seen who those teams are. I don't know if they're going to release that or not, but it looks like that's where Justin wanted to go, so they took a sixth-round pick, a conditional six. When you hear the asking price and the value, man, what's your first reaction to that?
I think the Pirates stole him. The Steelers stole him. A sixth-round pick for a guy who is not playing that bad. I mean, he's in a team in Chicago that's terrible. And I don't care who was there. You know, St. Peter could be under center, and he ain't going to win. That's how bad the Bears are. So, yeah, I was amazed that Chicago didn't hold on and say, hey, look, you know, I need a second or a third, and, you know, just hold on to him until then. But you know what? Once all the shoes started to drop with Cousins going here and Russell Wilson going there, and now I think the Bears panicked. I think they said, hey, we got to get rid of this guy now because we're going to draft a quarterback. Let's get rid of him and let's see what we can get. And that may have been the best asking price.
We're seeing what the Bears are actually doing with a different GM now, obviously. Poles is not the guy that drafted Justin Fields, but they've signed some receivers. They've added some help. And you're seeing what Washington's doing with Dan Quinn as the head coach over there, stocking up some offensive line, getting Austin Eckler, getting some... Like, that's what you have to do, right, when you draft one of these young quarterbacks. Again, I look at C.J. Stroud, who had one of the best rookie seasons ever as a quarterback. Houston didn't ask him to do too much. They gave enough talent, solid defense, kept them in close games. But that you have to make that approach, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And I'll tell you what, because what people need to understand, if you're going 1, 2, and 3 in the draft, and I think Jaden Daniels is the one that's going to be a real challenge, because if you look what happened to Richardson last year, you know, he got beat up early. And that's your running quarterback. But I'll tell you what, they're going to bad football teams. They're going to the Bears. They're going to Washington. They're going to New England. They're bad. So don't expect them to do a C.J. Stroud, because these guys aren't playing in the AFC South. You know, Tennessee had a bad year. Indianapolis was okay. Jacksonville was okay. I mean, they were like the NFC South. I mean, they were just about as bad. So, you know, you're going to talk, New England's going to have to go against Buffalo twice. They're going to have to go against Miami twice. You look at these teams. Washington's going to have the Eagles twice, Dallas twice, Giants twice. You know, that's not going to be a real good schedule for a rookie. So they're going to have to be patient, and they're going to have to surround him with as much talent as possible in all three places.
Leo Haggerty, Amped Up Sports. We talk a little football, then of course we talk a little bracket challenge. We've been putting you to work the last couple of weeks to talk a little college basketball, sir. When you look at the conference tournaments and the championships, how surprised are you that there were some teams that knocked off other teams in their bubble spots, huh?
Yeah, hugely surprised, because the very few of the number ones made it to the finals. But again, Gus, it's an unrealistic expectation. You know, you're playing, you know, 3 games in 3 days. That just doesn't happen during the regular season. And a perfect example of that was San Diego State playing New Mexico out in Vegas. They got to the last 4 minutes. You could see San Diego State just ran out of gas. And a lot of these teams, like North Carolina, I think, just ran out of gas because they're not used to playing 3 games in 3 days.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I got a way of solving this, and it's real simple. You got to make each conference get two of them. Two automatic bids, one for the tournament, one for the regular season. Now you got 62 teams in there, 64. All you got to do is say, okay, we may expand this out to 80, and then the rest of those, they're play-in games. But the fact that Dayton was a stretch to get in, USF doesn't get in, and a team they beat and a team that was behind them in the conference got in. And I don't understand that. And again, like I said, the NCAA, the worst thing that happened last year was San Diego State and Florida Atlantic getting in, because they don't want those guys in. They want the blue bloods.
I like that. All right, so I have my bracket open. I asked you to see what your bracket was here as well. Am I going chalk? Am I going blue? Or just like when you sat there and look at your bracket, what went into your decision in picking teams? Is it where they are right now? Hot, injuries, things of that nature. What do you see?
Well, here's the thing. That's if you look back, a 16 has only beaten a 1 twice. Virginia was one of them. What happened the following year? Virginia won the national championship.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue was the other. I think Purdue is going to be on a mission. And the best thing that happened to Purdue is they lost in the Big Ten tournament. Because okay. now Coach Painter, he can reassess. He can sit down and say, okay, guys, see what happened? We took this lightly. Now we got to get there. We got to get there. And that's I think Purdue is one of them. I got one of those in one bracket. But I'll tell you what, UConn is phenomenal if they're healthy. They are big. They are long. They are athletic. And where they not are, they are really big, you know, inside. And it's Hurley's got a great combination up there. They're going to be tough to beat. But what's funny, Gus, is you could end up with San Diego State playing UConn there in the bracket of the Sweet 16, and that's a rematch of last year. So that'll be maybe a fun game.
Mm. All right, let's go through them a little bit here. What I thought was interesting, let's just start in the East. Who do you have coming out of the East, Leo? Is it UConn?
Yeah, UConn. On both, like I did two of them, and I got UConn coming out of both of them.
Okay.
You know, just if they're healthy, I just don't see it. Now, Illinois, they could give them a game. Iowa State, they could give them a game. And you know what? All you got to do is have one good game, and that's what you're looking at. So, again, I think UConn, if they bring their A game, they're going to be tough to beat.
What about in the West? You see some upsets, or you see North Carolina coming out?
I see an upset, both of them. I see Arizona upsetting North Carolina, or I see Baylor. One of those two can beat North Carolina because I don't think Carolina has that killer instinct yet. You know, they're just going to try to get up and down the floor. They're going to try to defend and try to score enough points. But I'll tell you what, Arizona and Baylor, man, they get after it. So you better be ready. It's going to play them. And I think Arizona and Baylor have a shot coming out. But then you got to play UConn, and that's going to be tough.
All right. So you got UConn, North Carolina on the East and West.
Nope, I got UConn and Arizona.
Sorry, Arizona.
No problem.
Yeah. In the South, is it Houston? Is it perhaps Florida, Kentucky, Marquette? Who do you got coming out of the South?
This is going to be a toss-up depending upon who ends up playing who. I think if Houston ends up playing Marquette
mm-hmm.
in that Elite Eight, Houston gets in. If Kentucky gets there, I don't want to play Kentucky. They have athletes out the yin-yang. Yeah. And believe me, they are really...
Is that how you would officially write it on a scouting report? Athletes out the yin-yang.
That's exactly how I would write it. They can score 100 in their sleep. So, you they're going to be tough to beat. So, yeah, I got Kentucky. If Kentucky plays Houston, I think Kentucky wins. If Houston doesn't have to play Kentucky, they get in. So I'm taking Kentucky.
Yeah, man, they got some scores. I mean, Reeves is good. Dillingham is solid. Shepherd can score. I mean, they all can play, man. And it's just, again, it's when you have multiple people that can, you know, put the ball in the bucket. I know that sounds simplistic, but it really is. It boils down to that. It does help you. All right. And then finally, got one more to get to, and that would be the Midwest. Is it like you just, well, I mean, you basically said Purdue will be on the mission, right? So you have them at least getting to the Final Four?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I got Purdue winning it if they end up playing Kentucky and then end up playing Arizona. But, I'll tell you what, the one team that can beat Purdue, though, Tennessee. That would be a great game, Purdue and Tennessee. But I'll tell you what, the hardest thing, and just the officiating has been terrible throughout the country on this. And Zach Edey is the toughest guy to officiate because he gets fouled every time. And they just can't call it.
Easy enough to see. Leo Haggerty, Amped Up Sports Manuals. Appreciate it. We'll see where your bracket stands on Friday when we talk again. Enjoy that spring training game, sir.
Absolutely. Hey, Gus, if I find a ball, I'll send it to you, all right?
Nice. Love that. That's what I like to hear. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Final segment. I got some more fresh Cedric Wilson sound that I cut during the last break. What he has to say about this offense, and again, he definitely paints the picture of you better do your homework, your Saints receiver. Little warning. Sports Hangover next on ESPN New Orleans.
The Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Only one performance a day.
So let's get this show on the road, eh?
Now back to the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengau.
Line and guest line, rudermancan.com. Go check them out, 262-8222. Brand new sponsor to the Sports Hangover. Appreciate Ruderman for doing that as well. Don't forget, Hour 2 is brought to you by Chris's Paving, and Hour 1 is brought to you by No Wake Outfitters. As I was saying, one of the things that we wanted to touch on was Cedric Wilson and Nathan Peterman being made available, the two newer Saints. And again, I understand the signings so far, this free agency aren't maybe what some Saints fans want, especially it's tough when you look at every now and almost seems like every 5 minutes on the Falcons Twitter account, signed with a new player here and there in Contavious Street and all this other stuff. That's happy for them. I keep saying the Saints are setting things up, and I keep saying rebuild. They may not want to say rebuild, retooling, whatever the language is. I think, as I've been saying, this is an offense that they hope will be clicking up and running all cylinders to its capability in a coming season or so. I'm not saying they don't want to, and obviously want to get to the postseason, want to make it work, see some success, but San Francisco, and even in Miami to an extent, last year was better than the first year, and it wasn't bad the first year, but the more time in it, I think you get the players that fit work properly with it, familiarity, things of that nature. And listening to Cedric Wilson today, it kind of confirms what at least my belief on that. So first and foremost, this is what he said about why the Saints.
Just going through the whole process and the 2 days of the span that it took. I felt like it was just the right fit, knowing that they were going to be running the same offense that I just ran in the previous 2 years. And then, obviously, talking to my agent about it, he knows more about the organization than me, so I picked his brain a little bit. And this was just the final destination that I felt like I wanted to be at.
All right, what did he know about New Orleans?
Just the whole fact that there was going to be a new coaching staff and just you want to go into a place that is, when you're new somewhere, you would like to mesh with everyone being new as well. So just learning the offense with everyone, even though I already know it, just being that in the room with the whole offense in general, when we're all going to be learning the terminology together, that kind of helps you speak the same language and you're not getting ran past by people that already know it.
There you go. That's going to be key. Now, why does he like this offense?
I feel like this offense just fits every different type of receiver, whether you're fast, whether you're tall. It definitely opens up the game for any unique skill set. And I found I've never played in the West Coast offense until I got there. And then it took me 2 years to kind of finally get comfortable. And now I kind of know what I like to do in it.
All right, you heard him say it took him 2 years to get comfortable. That's why I keep saying this isn't a 3 to 5 month. Let's hope this, let's just throw Band-Aid stuff at it together. You know, you go back to Jeff Ireland saying he sat down with Kubiak. What kind of players do you want? What did you think of the draft process, the combine process, the interviews, things of that nature? I think they're going about this the right way. Figure it out. Get your players. Get some of that house in order with some of that money. And then continue to build and see what you can come up with, if that makes any sense. This is why I said you might want to do your homework.
I feel like it's like what I said earlier. The offense is its base, but any type of body type can fit into it as long as you just buy into the system, because it is going to take a lot of mental capacity to learn it and get comfortable with it. But it allows you to see the different works. Like one guy may be able to run this route and one guy might be able to run this route. But at the same time, everybody has to be able to do everything. And if you get a group of 4 or 5 guys that all buy in and want to do it, it's definitely an exciting offense to watch. And it puts up a lot of points if you run it the right way.
There you go. So it's going to take some time. to get everything in there. Now, that said, he believes that this team has some weapons that he can work with.
Oh, I mean, that's exciting. Those, I mean, you're talking about some very talented guys in the offense. And just watching them on TV, I mean, you root for them. Just being on another team, you just want to see a good game. And then, I mean, Alvin running the ball effortlessly. And then Olave being the young guy that he is. I feel like both of them bring different elements to the offense. And this offense in general, with me knowing how it's ran, I think it's definitely going to execute. I mean, definitely be easy to execute for both of those type of guys.
All right. So, again, give you some idea on that. And as far as what he may be asked to do, early talks so far with the staff?
Just the overall factor of just be a vet and make sure I need you to stay on the lookout for small things and make sure that I'm coming to work every day being a veteran that the younger players need to see, but at the same time showing that I can compete, and that's going to bring the best out of everybody.
All right, you gotta like that. And finally, Scott Craig, be thankful that John Forkey is not sitting next to you when I tell you, what does he bring to this offense?
I mean, just me in general, I catch the ball when it's thrown to me. Obviously, I mean, most people have seen my career. I don't really get that many opportunities, but you can most of the time guarantee when the ball is coming to me, it's probably going to get caught.
How about that, baby? A receiver that can catch the ball. Now, look, again, familiarity with the offense, familiarity with what he needs to do, and how to help explain that is the main reason he's here. That's it. Tomorrow, college baseball coaches and a lot more. Sports Hangover. After further review with Matt Moscona next on ESPN New Orleans.